This is actually really the first time I presented at a conference that wasn't didn't have people in like little kitty cat suits and dressed up like Power Rangers and stuff. So, I guess be gentle. This is like, yeah. Well, I don't know. I could have worn something, but I think that that would be a little much. But yes, it's phallic home economics, or how I learned to stop worrying and love my cock. And it's like, if you don't want to see pictures of penises, you might want to just leave the Bay Area entirely. Because that could be a problem. Okay, so what is gender? When we think of gender, it's sort of like, well, you know, you're either sort of a man or a woman, and there's sort of this broad range that's in between. You could be sort of, you know, another category that is not a specific box. It's a line you can sort of draw in. But gender in actuality is not only, you know, what you're perceived as, you know, or, you know, what your physical sex is, but it's also the gender identity. It's, you know, in psychological terms, it's what's between your ears. What do you think whenever you think about who you are, and how does society sort of push upon that with expectations and pressures and gender stereotypes and things like that? So that's sort of like this huge expanse of things that come together to create gender. But, you know, you're the one that's always in control of your own narrative. You know, you can be as masculine or as feminine as you want and still be a man or a woman, or sort of decide that, you know, you're not really sure, or be androgynous, or be sort of a different category. And it doesn't really matter. No one's going to pressure you into, you know, conforming to one specific thing. And if they do, they're an asshole. So maybe you shouldn't, like, hang out with them. So don't conform your life decisions to what other people want, because they're not super worth it if they expect you to do what they want you to do. So note on terminology is trans sort of encompasses everything. There's people who sort of like cross dress on the weekends, and it's like, okay, well, they're in the transgender community. And then there's people who are, you know, transsexual, which is a very specific, you know, hyper-specific thing of you've transitioned from one specific gender or sex or perceived sex into the totally different one, and you're sort of ensconced in that little area. And that's mostly what this talk is about, is guys who were born female or born intersexed but were sort of raised as female. Is it important to actually have something in your pants? The answer is not really. you know, I've been into clubs and have guys like randomly grab my crotch and be like, yeah, but that's so rare as to be like the extreme far thing. It's more likely that I'll be at like the TSA desk and they'll be like frisking me vigorously. And the expectation is that there will be something there. And if there's not, well, we had the wrong person frisk you. You know, in other countries, it's sort of a different thing. Like, you know, you're not going to be strip searched coming into Saudi Arabia, but if you're, you know, a guy in the U.S. or from the U.S. and you're going over there, they're not really going to strip search you just because of social norms, and it's not really considered okay to see other men naked for a variety of reasons. But when they frisk you, they expect something to be there. So yes, for some people, depending on your circumstances, depending on your culture, you have to have something in your pants that's either organic or not. There are a lot of different surgical options. I included body modification and piercing in this just because that's really the category it belongs into. But the first one is basically there's nothing that's been surgically done here. This is all done with piercings with the labia, just basically connecting them together. Now, the pros on this are sort of nebulous. It gives the appearance of a scrotum, but the cons are sort of, you know, there's risk of rejection, you know, jewelry can get embedded, there's excess scarring if you plan on having surgery later on, it can sort of affect things there. But the price is not particularly bad, and if you don't really want to go further than that, then that's actually a really good option that a lot of people sort of explore. And you can also get a piercing underneath the clitoris to sort of give it projection. Now, this is someone who is not trans at all and who has this sort of piercing. So if there's an enlarged clitoris due to testosterone use or stuff like that, then the effect is going to be a lot more dramatic than that. They're very inexpensive, very short healing time, and their sexual function is not typically reduced unless something just goes wrong, like a serious infection or something that's majorly rare. But your appearance can vary. Sorry. No coffee. Let's see. A clitoral release, there's not really a good way to picture this, because it's basically a clitoris that is bigger, and that's it. But there's a ligament that holds it in place. Once you snip that, there's a little bit extra. Guys get this done all the time for penis enlargement. The main drawback there is that it just basically sort of, like, after a while, it sort of just, like, retracts. It's only really good for a few years. The problem is that this is being sort of pushed out there as a legitimate avenue for, you know, surgical options for guys. It's not really permanent. A lot of guys actually have, like, less length over time just because they can no longer pump and get this sort of enlarged appearance and things like that. You can no longer stretch the ligament once it's been snipped. So definitely food for thought. There's testicular implants, and getting them on their own is actually pretty good. You have this problem of you have the world's smallest penis, but as you can see, the difference between the trans guy and the non-trans guy who also has a very small penis is actually pretty minimal. There's actually going to be some pictures of guys with really small penises. I've put their ages just because I don't want anybody to think I'm a creepy pedo bear and went surfing for random pics. These are actually from, like, a site that's done for, like, medical research, so there's nothing really wrong. That guy actually has, like, about 4.5 inches once he's erect, but flaccid, he's pretty much inverted. I hate to put it like that. But it's pretty out there. But this is pretty much the typical surgery that most trans guys get, or most trans guys that choose surgery get. And it's basically you have two average-sized testicles, a relatively small penis, and it uses your basic pre-existing body stuff to make it. The only thing that's brought in from the outside is solid silicone. And those don't typically travel very far, and they're not going to leak or anything like that. So there's really no risk of, you know, damaging or permanently hurting some sort of outside area, which is a problem. Unfortunately, with, like, liquid silicone, it's starting to become an issue with trans guys as well. Can you guys actually hear me? Okay, cool. You know, there are a lot of trans women who have tried liquid silicone in their lips, you know, hips, stuff like that. It's starting to sort of go over to the trans guy community as well, and that's just a nightmare. You never want to have that type of, you know, hardware, that type of, like, horrific stuff anywhere near, you know, major arteries, nerves, bladder and bowel. It's like it can obstruct anything for any reason. It's just right there. And this is the same person, like, immediately pre-surgery and immediately afterward. That area on the before picture that actually looks like an anus is actually not. They'd had their vagina removed, like, decades before. But it's basically, you can kind of see that it's the clitoris is basically the exact same size. It's just been sort of, like, unleashed. And then there's, like, testicular implants that sort of pooch out. So and this is someone who's not trans, who basically has the same situation going on, except, I guess, less hair. But same basic body type, but a little bit taller, and they're going to have basically the same results as someone who is trans. And there's also another one, but this is in the bottom 30% of erectile length. So erect length is something like 4.5 inches for this person who is not trans at all, but you know, you kind of have to, like, if you can recognize your limitations, you can really work around them in any way that you want to. You can use hands, you can use toys, you can put your whole face in there, you can really pretty much do whatever you want. There's a lot of dangerous stuff, and this especially as younger and younger guys are sort of having to go it alone, they're sort of having to, like, wing it. Because I've talked to guys that are in their, you know, 15 to 17 range, who are considering, you know, some or all of these. It's like, hey, I found a website where I can buy, like, animal-grade testicular implants, and I probably know a guy who can put them in. And that's pretty much, like, the worst idea I've ever heard, but I keep hearing it. It's like, I could just make a pocket myself and pop them in there. It's like, no, no, you cannot do that. It's like, I can call you an ambulance right now. This is going to go south. So, don't try to pierce yourself. It's totally normal to, like, pierce your own ears. You know, if you get an infection in your ear, that's not a big deal. If you get an infection in your clitoris, that's a major issue that's going to like ruin your whole day at least. Yes. The risk of like doing the risk of doing the nudicles, the veterinary grade testicular implants that you can just buy on like eBay and places like that. Rejection, if you don't know what you're looking for, it can kill you. Infection, which is extremely common in the genital area. You can be allergic to any compound in the testicle. It's made for animals that only live like 5 to 10 years anyway. So, you know, you might not want to do that if you're hoping to live to 60. You can also completely lose sexual function and the ability to orgasm. And because they're so small, they can move around, you know, block your urethra, block various parts of your body. So just don't do it. The most common option, of course, is that most people don't do anything. You know, no one really knows what's in my pants unless they're in the TSA or they're someone that I've selected who can touch me wherever. And it doesn't really matter. So, talking about class, there's a lot of issues involved with what's called medicalization. And it's sort of like, there's this idea that if you start out as one sex or gender and you end up as another one, that there's something sort of fundamentally wrong with you. And I can understand that on a lot of levels because it can totally like ruin your afternoon at least. It's probably very likely to cause you major problems at some point, but it's more of an issue of dealing with society as a whole. You know, internally and stuff like that, you can pretty much resolve things over time. But there are places where it's appropriate to sort of say, yes, someone is trans, you know, yes, we need to make some sort of a distinction here just because otherwise we just can't get anything done. And it's sort of like in the DSM, which is the diagnostic manual that psychologists use, it comes up and you pretty much need a diagnosis in order to get treatment of any type. The ICD-10 and ICD-9 is how you bill your insurance company. And that comes up a lot in your medical records. So it's necessary there. You know, you have to be honest and open with your physician. So health questionnaires are very good. Not appropriate is stuff like employment surveys, and there's something called the Minnesota Multiphasic, which is basically gives a firm crazy, not crazy. And the difference between crazy and not crazy is stuff like, you know, do you practice witchcraft? Do you believe in fairies? You know, do you have diarrhea on a regular basis? It's like you can be totally not crazy and have diarrhea. I'm aware of this. Okay. But you can also be totally not crazy and be trans. You can also be crazy and be trans, but it really not in a factor either way. And the Uniform Code of Military Justice. If you are in the military and you actually see a provider, like your personal physician, personal therapist usually, off base, you can actually get into serious trouble for that. You can actually be, you know, cited. They can put you before, you know, military justice situation. Either, depending on where you're at, they could put you in front of a tribunal. If you order online and get your hormones from overseas, then they can actually court-martial you. And it's a very serious thing. I mean, I've dealt with a lot of people who are in the Middle East who are typically quite young, but a lot that are sort of older, and they're sort of exploring their options, but it's like they're very restricted, and it can be very difficult. It's not really politic to say this, but it's actually an extreme distraction if you're having to worry about, okay, if I say anything, somebody might shoot me in the face, but if I don't say anything, this is going to distract me from what I'm actually supposed to be working on. And so I think that it's important to be honest with yourself if you're ever in that type of situation or know someone who is. But really you just need to explore your options for therapy. And if you're in a position where you are not in immediate physical danger, then pursue medical options. But since most people don't do anything, you really start to get into the packing options, which are stuff like, you know, cloth and up, all the way up to high-end prosthetics. And this is actually available online. She has actually done quite a few of these. They're hilarious, but they're actually shaped and sized correctly. It's like, wah, wah. No. But that's actually hideous, but you can actually make those. The thing with using like a soft cloth or a sock is that it's extremely easy to clean for obvious reasons. They're extremely cheap. You can make them yourself. There's no age restrictions. You don't need a credit card. They're not very realistic, and they lose their shape. You need to replace them frequently. You know, otherwise, you sort of wind up with something that looks like that. They have phallic toys. I couldn't find a decent picture for this, and I absolutely could not bring any of my items that I wanted to bring through TSA. So that is a phallic toy, but you shouldn't put that in your pants. But very squishy, gel-filled toys, stuff that's shaped like a slug usually, works pretty well. And a lot of really young guys do this. But, you know, do we really know what they're made out of? If you're buying something at the dollar store that's made in China, you're kind of taking a risk. I mean, you're about to put that next to, you know, mucous membranes, things that could get very, at the low end, could get very irritated. At the high end, could have some sort of long-term issues that we're not really clear on. And of course, they're very flimsy and they're not really realistic. If someone grabs your crotch, no one's going to be like, oh, that's definitely a penis. Cyberskin packers are probably one of the most common options other than just, you know, using a sock. But they're fairly cheap, $12 to $30. They are available online, of course, but you have to have a credit card to buy them, and or you must be over 18. So if you're 15 or 16, you either need to lie and get like a Green Dot card or something like that to get them. Or if you simply just don't have the money to have a credit card, but you have it in cash, it can be extremely difficult to actually get a hold of one of these. They're also kind of absorbent. There's actually a funny ongoing TSA issue you can have is that because they're so soft, people will put lotion on them. And it makes them super, super soft, and it's really great. But if you take them through TSA, occasionally they will false, you know, they will automatically get a false positive for C4, which is the most best thing that could ever happen to you in your life. It's explosive dick. No, that's like that definitely involves you like pulling basically out in public and everything, just pulling it out and everything getting swabbed. But it's false positive when you walk through. They can swipe it and see if it's, you know, C4 or not. If you go through the if you actually go through the new rapid scan things, if you are packing, you have to opt out. And I was actually informed by the State Department, you have no choice. You have to opt out. So they were very friendly with me when I got my passport, but they're like, you know, you got to opt out. Otherwise, you're risking strip search and any number of other things that can go on at the TSA, which is pretty much anything. They also have a pack and play, which looks very similar to this. Really, the pros are that, you know, you need fewer toys. You don't need, like, a dildo, and you don't need, like, you know, two or three packies depending on your situation. You just have one thing, and you don't need to switch it out or anything like that. But you absolutely have to be over 18. You have to have a credit card. And this sort of gets into, like, a class thing, because if you're in the middle of nowhere, when I started transitioning, like, 8-9 years ago, I lived in rural Oklahoma. So it was time to start sewing and making things, because it was absolutely impossible to get a hold of anything reasonable. And you have to have a credit card. You must be over 18. And it's still got the absorbency issues, the TSA issues. They can be very heavy and extremely expensive. I've seen some that have been about $100. And a lot of times they don't really work. They don't really work as advertised. They could be pack and play, but they're like a foot long and extremely firm. You might not think about it at the time when you're purchasing it, but that really stands out if it's in your pants. It's probably best just to avoid that altogether. Dildos. And it's, again, you need fewer toys. Again, available online. If you're having sex with a partner, you will probably have one at some point, just because of variety and things like that. But, you know, again, they have all the same issues with packers. They have all the same issues with pack and play. They're also extremely hard and uncomfortable to carry around in your pants. So, not recommended. Ah, yes, the DIY hair gel packy. This is actually, like, probably your best option if you have no money. They're cheap. You can basically put them in any skin tone you could possibly ever think of. They use ingredients you might actually have already. You know, there's no age restrictions. You can do this even if you're a kid. And there's no payment restrictions. You can get that stuff anywhere. The cons are that it can pop. It can pop. Oh, it'll pop. And when it pops, you should be ready. But, so it's very flimsy. And basically, how you put this together is, you have condoms and you fill them with hair gel, and then you layer additional condoms on top to create this hopefully waterproof barrier that is surprisingly realistic and actually very bouncy. You can throw it on the floor and it'll bounce up, and it's really hilarious. But it's, and you can really just put them together. It's very, very easy to do. But yeah, there are some serious cons there. It's not recommended for long-term wear. They last about 3 months each. And then we have prosthetics. These can actually, like, these can really run the gamut. I mean, a lot of them are really great. A lot of them are expensive for what you get. Some can go from, or most can go from flaccid to erect, or you also have options where you can use them to stand to pee, depending on what you actually are interested in. For some people, standing to pee is more important than actually having sex. Okay. But they look very realistic, and actually these pictures don't do them justice. I've had them within inches of my face, and I would be hard-pressed to tell them apart from a regular penis. So, there are also stand-to-pee devices. The pee style is a wondrous thing, because it's not expensive. It's about $12, and it's not dependent on having a specific size or direction of urinary flow. It's basically, it cups the entire outside of the vulva from the back, and it's almost impossible to pee on yourself, because that's really what most of these are, is an invitation to piss all over yourself. It takes some serious practice, and you can't always do it. And these are some ones that are actually extremely difficult, because the entryway is actually probably about an inch to three quarters of an inch, and it can be extremely difficult to actually get the urine where you want it and keep it away from where you don't. But this is extremely, the pee style is also useful if you are actually a woman and interested in camping or something like that, or you have to do some business in the Tenderloin and you don't want to sit on anything at all ever. So they're like $12. They're very handy. Actually, I have an ex that has one. They're very useful. Again, if you're dealing with the TSA and you are trans, or you know someone who's trans, let them know they have to opt out. They don't have a choice. But, you know, who wants to star in fuzzy blue ghost porn anyway, really? And that's me. I knew this was going to run short. But I want to talk about a little bit about excessive medicalization, because in terms of, like, you need some amount of medicalization in the Western culture in order to get treated. So if you want a prescription for, you know, medical substance, they're going to expect that you have met certain things. You're going to have to meet certain restrictions. And that's great. That keeps out people who are having serious mental health issues. I mean, I'm a psychology major and I'm trans and it's not a big deal. But it keeps people from having, you know, serious issues later on down the line. Most of the people that, you know, wind up in the news of they've had a sex change and then they went back, it's like they didn't think it through and they really bought their way through the system without really investigating what it is that they personally wanted. So, is it irritating? Yes. Excessive medicalization is very stigmatizing. What do I mean by that? Well, it's if you are a trans guy and you have gynecological issues of any type or medical issues of any type, it can be exceedingly hard to get treated because a lot of physicians actually have this idea that it's sort of this esoteric, exotic thing, and if they do the wrong thing, it's bad. So they're not really usually willing to treat you. I had this sort of an ongoing issue with that, and it culminated in me almost dying like last December just because I could not get treated. And it's sort of like the person who wound up ultimately treating me was a nurse practitioner at Mazzoni GLBT Center in Philly. So I have a lot of love and a super huge amount of respect for them. But, you know, it's not super great, but it's better than the alternative, and I think that, you know, really education can go a long way. There's a lot of public health advocacy that's ongoing. You know, sort of this thing of, you know, you can try different things. You don't absolutely have to 100% agree with what someone is doing with their life, but you definitely have to look at the person overall. So, you know, food for thought, I guess. And let's see. I have more, I think. I think I might not have more slides. I think I might be out of slides. I do. Okay. Let's see. Okay, questions. Ah, hi. Hi, Rose. That's true. The question was that dealing with insurance can be interesting if you are physically at least partially, your birth sex, and then you switched over your paperwork and your insurance and stuff like that. That's absolutely true. And the bureaucracy in insurance companies is hilarious. But I think that the key, the way that I've put this to other people is basically if you really have to weigh what are the pros of saving money on, say, your hormones or saving money on various medical care that you get versus the possibility that you'll have a gynecological problem that might be serious that might cost you a lot of money. Now, I'll tell you from experience that having female on your insurance won't necessarily save you from having to pay out of pocket. At least in this country, insurance is basically phrased as, how can we get out of this? Not what has caused this given problem, but is there a way that we can avoid personally having to pay for it? But that can be definitely tricky. A lot of people switch over their insurance very early on, only to find out that they have like polycystic ovaries, or that they have, dysplasic cervical cells, which can ultimately go cancerous, but that needs to be treated, and that can get very pricey. So you really have to seriously look at what your medical history is. You might want to get some, opinions from a physician or from your provider on what you should actually be doing. But until you like actually get rid of your uterus, if that's in the plan, I would probably say that it's worth the embarrassment of just having female on your insurance. So, questions? You. The grounds in the UCMJ, a lot of people think that it's related to don't ask, don't tell. It isn't. It's actually a completely separate thing. You're not allowed to get any type of medical care that is not approved, pre-approved by the military. So they will find that you have actually done this, or if they find that you will have done this, or you say that you have, or someone squeals on you, which is the more likely scenario, then it can actually be a serious issue. But overall, I overall don't think that it's that big of a deal because you're, unless you are looking at retiring in like a few months, losing your military career isn't going to be a huge mark on your record. So, let's see. Ah, Meme. Okay, question from Twitter. I love this. Yes. Well, the texture when it shows up under the scanner, or the question was, what about the C4 giving off, or the Paki giving off a fake C4 signal? It actually has to do with lotion in general. Lotion in general can possibly give off a, because of the chemical composition, they can give off a fake, C4 signal basically. But the problem is that it's cumulative over time. It absorbs so much of that it's very strong. But when you go through, if you go through like the rapid scan, it'll show up as sort of like a gel, which is basically what they're looking for is gel near your penis. So if you have gel near your penis, that's bad. Oh, yes. Awesome. All right, I'm just going to repeat that for the sake of the recording is that they're also looking for density. So if you have a packer that is actually similar to the density of C4, it'll show up because of the density signature when you go through a scanner. But I don't know. Yes. Question is, is there anything that people that are packing soft, I guess, with something made out of cloth? Oh, okay. Is there something that you should know about packing while you're flying? Oh. Basically that you can tell them that you're trans and that you're wearing a pros the way I would put it is that you're wearing a prosthetic in your pants. They might be a little bit more thorough in that area, but whenever they're patting you down. But I haven't had them actually notice that I was wearing it. I just had them sort of, if you are sort of androgynous, it might be more of an issue. But I'm pretty androgynous, and so far hasn't been an issue. The only bad thing is that I've had mostly women pat me down, because I think that's part of their regulations. But questions? Comments? Tomatoes? Yes. I actually hadn't heard that. I actually had not heard that Australia has a third sex box on their passports. I know that Thailand has a third sex box on their passports, and they're actually getting a lot of pushback on that. But I don't know about Australia. But I don't know. I think that it's one of those things where you have to be sort of okay with being considered sort of a third sex or a third gender, and not everybody is. But you know, I think that it would work. If it reduces hassle, it might be worth it. But you also have to look at where you're going and will that be an issue there. So I guess that's it. Yay! Yay.